If you have a confidential prayer request and you just want one person to see that, there's a card. There's some cards in the front pocket. And you can fill those out and just hand it to somebody and say, this is confidential. I'd like for you to pray for these things. So we are in the book of Joshua, and today we are wrapping up this five-week study. And we're going to be in the last chapter of Joshua, which is Joshua chapter 24. Before Liz and I got pregnant, we were trying to get pregnant for years, as you know. But in 2013, we thought, you know, we better take this chance while we can, while we have a little money. So we went to Italy. It was a kind of a belated 10-year anniversary trip. And Italy, I fell in love with Italy. I just love it. I love the art. I love the food. I love the people. I love the scenery. I love the architecture. Just love it. One of the places we went to was Rome. You got to go to Rome if you go to Italy. And there's so much to see in Rome. You can really spend your whole vacation in Rome and still not see everything. There's a building there that I wanted to see, and it's called the Pantheon. Here's a picture of it. Pantheon is really old. I think it was, if I remember right, it was built in like the year 6 A.D. And it's been changed and added onto and other things. It started as a place of worship for all the gods. That's what Pantheon means, all gods. And, you know, some of you, everybody probably, if you're in middle school or higher, you've studied Greek mythology and Roman mythology, okay? These are the gods that were worshipped in this building. And inside, that's what it looks like on the inside, and you see kind of the second layer up where those little windows are. That's probably where the statues of different gods sat, as well as on the bottom. Now, it was converted to a church in, I forgot what year it was, and so they stripped all the pagan stuff out of it, and they brought in Christian stuff. It's not a place of worship anymore. There are some famous people buried there. It's more of a tomb than anything else and a tourist attraction. But the Pantheon represents most of the world. Most of the ancient world, for sure. Polytheism, which means more than one god. Poly means many, right? Theism is God. So the belief in more than one god is has been forever the go-to religious experience for people in the world. It's been true for a very long time. And we're going to talk about that today. Before we really get into that, I want to run through part of the book of Joshua. Because we went last week, we were in chapter 7 and 8. This week we're in chapter 24. Okay, we really pushed the fast forward button. So let's just kind of catch up what went on in those other chapters. All right. So in chapters 9 and 10, this is the story of the campaign in the south part of Canaan. So they're conquering new city states and little kingdoms, and they're defeating people in the south. Then chapter 11 is the northern campaign, and they go and they're attacking places up there. And then chapters 13 all the way through 21 is the distribution of the land to all the different tribes. And really, all 8 chapters on, okay, the tribe of Judah, your land extends from this to this to this. Here are your borders. And so that's really all that is. And I don't want to make light of it because it's the promised land. It's their inheritance. And then in chapter 22 through 24, the last 3 chapters, it's kind of the epilogue to the book of Joshua. Joshua gives his farewell speech. They renew the covenant at a town called Shechem. And Joshua dies, he's buried, and all the elders that are his age and older also die. And right before, or right during he's doing this covenant renewal, Joshua rehearses, I guess that's a good word, he reminds the people of all that God has done through the years. That's where we're going to pick up in the beginning of chapter 24. I have some verses on the screen. I forgot to show you this. This is not in the Pantheon, the building of the Pantheon, but this is a painting of a Pantheon of gods. All right? And you just Google Pantheon of gods. You'll see tons of images, especially in the Renaissance. Because in the Renaissance, the artists were infatuated with ancient Greece. And they loved, the classical literature and art, and they just really brought that through the Renaissance, and they incorporated it into their paintings and everything. In fact, this is a side note, this really bugged me in Italy. We go to all these churches, and we'd see this beautiful artwork, right? And in the corner, or down below, or up high in the corner, kind of overlooking this beautiful scene that this artist has painted of the crucifixion or the ascension or any biblical scene, you see these little Greek philosophers and oracles. And they're like looking on as if giving approval. And it really bothered me that you go into churches and there'd be a statue of Jesus. And there's a statue of Aristotle. It's weird, that syncretism of mixing pure Christianity with things from ancient Greece. All right, so chapter 24. Then Joshua, so this is Joshua rehearsing all that God has done. Then Joshua assembled all the tribes of Israel at Shechem. He summoned the elders, leaders, judges, and officials of Israel, and they presented themselves before God. Joshua said to all the people, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Long ago, your forefathers, including Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, lived beyond the river," that's beyond the Euphrates River, "and they worshipped other gods." Beyond the river refers to, you remember what town Abraham was from? Ur, right? So that was part of what we would call today modern-day Iraq. So beyond the Euphrates River is known as Mesopotamia. It's known as Sumer. Right? So that's the area we're talking about. Where am I? "They lived beyond the river and they worshipped other gods." Verse 3. "But I took your father Abraham from the land beyond the river and led him through Canaan and gave him many descendants. I gave him Isaac, and to Isaac I gave Jacob, and to Jacob Esau. I assigned the hill country of Seir to Esau, but Jacob and his sons went down to Egypt." Then, so that's the Abraham era, right? God chose those people. He selected them out of polytheism. They're worshiping all these false gods. He pulls them out of there. He says, "You're my chosen people. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to give you a promised land." Then we get to the Moses era, okay? The Egypt and Moses. Then, verse 5, "Then I sent Moses and Aaron. I afflicted the Egyptians by what I did there, and I brought you out. When I brought your fathers out of Egypt, you came to the sea, and the Egyptians pursued them with chariots and the horsemen as far as the Red Sea. But they cried to the Lord for help, and he put darkness between you and the Egyptians. He brought the sea over them and covered them. You saw with your own eyes what I did to the Egyptians. Then you lived in the desert for a long time." So there's the Moses era. God has been faithful. Now we come up to the end of the desert time, and they're on the other side of the Jordan River. They haven't crossed over the Jordan River yet into the Promised Land. They're in the area called the Transjordan, okay? "I brought you to the land of the Amorites who lived east of the Jordan. They fought against you, but I gave them into your hands. I destroyed them before you and took possession of their land. When Balak, son of Zippor, and king of Moab prepared to fight against Israel, he sent for Balaam, son of Beor, to put a curse on you, but I would not listen to Balaam. So he blessed you again and again, and I delivered you out of his hand. Now we're going to cross the Jordan River into the Promised Land. Then you crossed the Jordan, and you came to Jericho. And the citizens of Jericho fought against you, as did the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. But I gave them all into your hands. I sent the hornet ahead of you, which drove them out before you. Also the two Amorite kings. You did not do it with your own sword and bow. So I gave you a land on which you did not toil, and cities you did not build, and you live in them, and eat from vineyards and olive groves that you did not plant. So God, Joshua, is rehearsing all these things that God has done for the people. Now, this book, this chapter, chapter 24, is really a summary of the book of Joshua. But I think it could be, it's a summary also of everything God has been doing since Abraham. And this is our history too, okay? It's easy to think, oh, that's Jews, right? That's them. This is our history. Because we can trace our lineage all the way back. We just keep going. We were adopted into the Jewish family of believers, right? It started with Abraham and kept going. So this is not just their story, it's our story. Now here, Joshua in verse 14, he's going to get personal. So he said, you need to fear God, you need to serve God, and you need to throw away your gods. So let's read this. Now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your forefathers worshipped beyond the river, the Euphrates River, and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your forefathers that your forefathers served beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Verse 16. Then the people answered, far be it from us to forsake the Lord to serve other gods. No way, we're not going to do that. It was the Lord our God himself who brought us. Now they're going to rehearse, right? They're going to recall what God has done. It was the Lord himself who brought us up out of Egypt and our forefathers out of Egypt from that land of slavery and performed those great signs before our eyes. He protected us and on our entire journey and among all the nations through which we traveled. And the Lord drove out before us all the nations, including the Amorites who lived in the land. We too will serve the Lord because he is our God. So the people say, Joshua, you said you and your house are going to serve. We're going to serve too. And Joshua says, you're not able to serve the Lord. He is a holy God. He's a jealous God. He will not forgive your rebellion and your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, he will turn and bring disaster on you and make an end of you after he has been good to you. But the people said to Joshua, no, we will serve the Lord. Then Joshua said, your witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen to serve the Lord. Yes, we are witnesses, they replied. Let's skip to verse 23. Now then, said Joshua, throw away your foreign gods that are among you, and yield your hearts to the Lord, the God of Israel. And the people said to Joshua, we will serve the Lord our God and obey him. Let's take a closer look at Joshua's charge in verse 14. He tells them to do three things. Remember, they're renewing this covenant. Joshua's in his last days. He's not going to live much longer. And he's doing what Moses did in Deuteronomy. Moses did the same thing. He reminded the people of all that God has done. And he also warned the people. He warned Joshua, when my people get into the promised land, you know what they're going to do? They're going to worship foreign gods. and I'm going to turn my back against them. Moses warned Joshua before he died. So three things Joshua says to, tells the people to do. Number one, fear the Lord. Now we throw that phrase out a lot. It's in the it's all through the Bible. Fear the Lord, fear the Lord, fear the Lord. Some people want to minimize that word and say, oh, that's just a reverence. That's all that is. That is not all that word means. Our God is a holy God. We don't even know what that means. He is so removed and different and so much more powerful and knowing than we are that we cannot even compare ourselves to Him. And He's not safe. Our God is not safe. He's dangerous. You do not want to come up against His wrath. So it's not just reverence. Fear the Lord does mean to revere. It means to respect. It means to be in awe of how powerful He is. The closest thing I can come to it is we use this for a phrase, a healthy fear. We have a healthy fear of fire. We have a healthy fear of electricity. Those are two powerful forces. A healthy fear respects the fire and doesn't mistreat the fire, doesn't assume too much or too little of the fire. The fire is powerful. And if we take it too lightly, we'll get burned. If we take electricity too lightly, you're going to get electrocuted. There is power in those wires. There's power in that flame. And we should be afraid of those things. Doesn't mean we stay away from them, does it? And we got electricity right now. When you're cold, you want to light a fire in the fireplace. These things are good. But we got to have a healthy respect for them, a healthy fear. Same thing for God. God is the one who created electricity and fire. There's so much more power in Him than we could ever even think of. In fact, in Deuteronomy it says, the Lord your God is a consuming fire. We got to be careful. We do need to fear God, fear His power. But it's a healthy fear. It's not, I'm scared of Him and He won't, He's going to zap me if I do something wrong. It's not that kind of fear. It's a healthy fear. The next thing He says to do is serve Him with all faithfulness. This word serve, part of it means, can be interpreted to worship, right? To worship the Lord, serve Him with your offerings, with your sacrifices, with your songs of praise. Come together and serve the Lord, but it also means much more than that. It's the word used for subjects of a king. Serve the king. Be loyal to the king. Do what the king says, whatever that is. So we got to serve the Lord. And the third thing He tells us to do, or tells them to do, is throw away the gods. Throw away the gods of your ancestors. Does it seem strange to you that they've been in the promised land for 7 years at this point? They've crossed over the Jordan. They've seen God do so much. And they still have idols packed in their stuff. Does that seem weird to you? It seems weird to me. And these are not just idols. Well, we'll talk about those idols in just a minute. But it's indicative of the problem of polytheism in the ancient world. Every culture in the ancient world was polytheistic. They were not monotheistic. They didn't believe in one God. They believed in multiple gods. Even Abraham was plucked out of a polytheistic culture. His father and ancestors worshipped idols. Only starting with Abraham did God say, I am the God, and I'm your God. There are no other gods. But even from that point on, even though that God established that covenant, they still wrestled with all these other gods. So, he says you need to get rid of your gods that you worshipped beyond the Euphrates in Ur or Sumer or Mesopotamia, Iraq, however you want to look at that. Get rid of the ones in Egypt. And so let's talk about this. Here's the Egyptian pantheon. There were lots and lots of gods in Egypt. One Egyptologist said there's over 1,400 names of deities listed in Egyptian literature. 1,400 gods. Can you imagine that? There's plenty to choose from. This has been a long time in Egypt. And we know they worshiped some of these false gods. There's evidence. When they came out of the desert, Moses went up to Mount Sinai. What did the people do? They built a golden calf and started worshiping it. That's an Egyptian god. So get rid of those gods that you had in Egypt. And he says, get rid of those gods that your fathers had beyond the Euphrates River, over in Sumer, in Mesopotamia. These are two pictures of pantheon gods in the Sumer pantheon of gods. Did you know the Sumerians had over 3,600 gods that they worshipped? There was no shortage of gods. And there were no shortage of images of gods and idols. The people, the Israelite people, the Jewish people, were nomadic, right? They traveled. Wherever they went to a new area and settled, Egypt, Mesopotamia, and now Canaan, they absorbed the religious culture around them. Oh, yeah, we still worship Yahweh. He is our God. He's our main God. But, I mean, look at all these gods. They have 3,600 gods. And they is the God of war, the God of fertility, the God of rain, the God of sun. Oh, yeah, let's call on the God of sun. We need some rain. Let's call on the God of rain because that's his specialty. So they absorb all these different gods from different cultures. And it keeps going even in Canaan. After they've been in the land for 7 years, Joshua takes them to the town of Shechem. This is the same town that Jacob told the people, and this is hundreds of years before Joshua, Jacob told the people, get rid of the foreign gods you have with you. You have. Get rid of them. This is a persistent problem for Israel. It's a persistent problem for all ancient cultures. And I think it's a persistent problem today. Given that everything God is, the Jews have witnessed, the deliverance from Egypt, all the miracles and the mighty acts, even the ones they saw for themselves, crossing the Jordan, Jericho, the defeat of all these cities, all this, to me, you would think they would understand that there's only one God. There aren't many gods to be worshipped. There's only one. In Canaan, they had a bunch of gods too. One of the main ones was, now some people say Baal, some people say Baal. I'm going to say Baal. I don't know what the correct pronunciation is. Baal was one of the main gods of Canaan religion. But there's a few more. Ashtaroth was also the female goddess. And here's a picture of them. Aren't they a great couple? These were two of the main gods in Canaan that the people were worshiping. They were carrying around these idols with them, worshiping. Some of the idols they carried were just idols connected to their ancestors, right? It's been passed down the family, and they pass it on just like you pass down your favorite armoire or something. But God, Yahweh, has a zero-tolerance policy. Now, I think we have the same problem today as they did. Here's the pantheon of the Greek gods, and there's 12 of them. in the, and they're called the Olympians. There's a lot more gods than 12 in Greek and Roman mythology, but the top 12 are called the Olympians. And you recognize some of those names. I want to put it to you today that we have our own pantheon of gods. We have our own 12 Olympians. Now, these are the ones I came up with. You may substitute some different ones. That's fine, because in syncretism, you can do whatever you want to do, right? You just grab whatever god you want to grab. So, here's the first one. The god of materialism. Let's stop and define what a god is. An idol is anything that takes the place of God. Anything that eats up our time, our energy, our focus, our desires, what we put our trust in. Anything other than God, Yahweh, can be a false god. It can be in our pantheon. And as middle class Americans, we have a unique set of gods that we worship. Right? We pull right alongside our worship of Jesus. Materialism is one of them. Another one is consumerism. Can't pass up a good buy, right? Gotta buy. Materialism is about gathering stuff and keeping stuff, even hoarding stuff, and just getting more and more and more, look at me kind of thing. Consumerism is this desire, and some of us, think about this, when you need to pick me up, some of us go shopping. All right? Just, let's go shopping. That'll solve it. It'll make me feel better. Nothing wrong with shopping. But shouldn't we be running to God instead of the mall? So another god that we have in our pantheon is convenience. The god of convenience. We live this is the most convenient place to live in the world. In America, there's a Walgreens on every other corner. We get upset when we have to wait in line for something. And it's fast food. But we have to wait in line. And the god of convenience robs us of our patience. It robs us of our perseverance. Another god is the god of me. All right? That's why I put a mirror up there. This is about my reputation, about my image, about my looks, how I present myself. Some of us struggle with the god of me. It's all about you. And there's selfishness there. And there's pride there. How about the god of nationalism? I love America. Okay? I love America. I don't want to live anywhere else. I love this country. But it is easy for nationalism to creep in and extreme patriotism to where you care more about the direction of the country than your own spiritual life. I know a lot of people, and so do you, who, especially around election time, get so twisted in their gut because they're worried about who the next leader is going to be. And they're talking down about the Democrats and how liberal they are. And they're talking down about the Republicans and how they hate poor people and they're greedy. And they're rah, 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 rah. And it's easy to turn on 600 AM or any other radio station or Fox News or whatever. It's easy to get enveloped in that dialogue. And that is what you're spending your time and your energy and your focus on. And that's what you're putting your trust in. We put our trust in government and politicians. If we could only get this guy in, then things would be different. This is the god of FOMO. Anybody know what FOMO is? F-O-M-O? Fear of missing out. Those are all social apps, social media apps. The younger generation especially, but even old guys like me, are becoming more and more addicted to these things. We check in all the time on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Vine, on YouTube, on all these Kick and so many other different social media apps. We got to know what's going on. We don't want to miss out on anything. And I want everybody to know what I'm doing. I have social apps on my phone. I use them. I like to keep in touch with people. There's nothing wrong with that. But it can become one of your gods. Do you fear on missing out of something? This might be one of your gods. Then we have the That was weird. When I said technology, my mic went out. Did y'all hear that? And now it's going to make noises. Okay. The god of technology. It's easy to put our hope in technology. And when something does go wrong with our phone or our computer, to blow a gasket, right? It's the end of the world. I don't know how to. I'm going to survive. Right, Daryl? That's right. It's easy to get caught up into that, the god of technology. Also, this is the god of distraction, or the god of entertainment. I don't want to pick on gamers. Nothing wrong with playing games. I could have put a DVD up here or a movie theater. I could have put any kind of sports or anything up here. Anything that it's a distraction. Distractions are good sometimes. But when that becomes the thing, when distractions or entertainment replaces our loyalty to God, and somehow God calls us to this, but our distractions are calling us over here, and if they compete, who's going to win? Next, we have the god of success, climbing that ladder. The god of power. Power is intoxicating. The god of sensual pleasure. And that's an old symbol because, you know, Playboy has announced they're not even going to do nude pictures in their magazine anymore. That? Because nudity is so available free on the internet. They're just going to stop doing it. I don't know what they're going to put in their magazines. So that's an old symbol. But sensual pleasure is all around us. It doesn't have to be pornography. It could be sex. It can be just taking off all your inhibitions and just walking naked through life. I don't mean that literally, but throwing everything off and just saying, I'm free, and then living extremely in your freedom world with drugs, with alcohol, with partying, with everything, okay? Sensual pleasures could be your god. And this one is going to hurt a little bit, but I think family can be a false god. We love our family. We value our family so much. We want to put them up on a pedestal. We want to take care of them. But it is easy. It's so easy for that to replace or become more important than following God. I don't know what your pantheon of gods, what's in your pantheon, but that's the 12 I came up with. Jesus agrees with what Josh was saying. It's three verses from the New Testament. In Mark 12:30, he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and with your mind, and with of your strength. Fear the Lord and serve him faithfully is what Joshua said. There's no room for false gods. Jesus says the same thing. I want all of your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength. There is no room for any other god. Throw those gods away. Get rid of them. Jesus says here in Matthew 6, No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. You can't do it. And you can substitute any of your false gods in there for money. And then lastly, in Revelation, Jesus says, I know your deeds. You're neither cold nor hot. I wish you were one or the other. So because you were lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I'm about to spit you out of my mouth. The real word there is vomit you out of my mouth. Jesus says, I want all of you. Don't be lukewarm. Don't give me part of your heart and part of your mind. I want it all. God is a jealous God. He is a consuming fire. He wants everything. Are we splitting our allegiances? There's good things. Those pantheon of gods I put up there, there's some good things in every one of them. But are they splitting our allegiances? Joshua says, he makes his proclamation in verse 15. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, this is kind of a sarcastic statement here, right? He just told them about how great God was and everything he did. And says, you need to throw away your gods. You need to give God your full service, fear the Lord. Then he says, but if that's, you know, if you choose not to do that, then you need to choose one way or the other. Choose for yourselves this day whom you are going to serve. Because you're going to serve somebody. You're going to serve some god or gods. We need to make a decision. To not to choose is to choose. Putting off a decision to serve all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, putting it off and say, I'll choose later, you've already made your choice. Not to choose is to choose. So it says, choose for yourself who you're going to serve. You can serve those gods that your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates. You can serve those gods of the Amorites or the Egyptians. But Joshua draws a line in the sand. And he says, but for me and my household, we are going to serve the Lord. Joshua makes a public choice in front of the whole nation. We are going to serve the Lord. I'm going to put it to you today. Who are you going to serve? And when I say serve, I mean complete, total loyalty. Complete, total trust. Complete, total abandonment of other gods. Shechem was a place that Jacob, hundreds of years before this, asked the people to evaluate themselves. And now Joshua, in the same town, is asking the Israelites to evaluate themselves, to throw away their false gods. I do not know which false gods that you struggle with. I bet it's some of those I put up on the screen. You're going to choose today to throw them away? Are you going to choose today to say, I don't know about everybody else, but for me, I'm going to choose the Lord. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. We will serve the Lord. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. We
will serve the Lord. We'll stand and sing. If you would like to talk or pray with the shepherds or the back.